vibes are nice. It just made me so sad.
Yeah, we have a huge wrestling tournament coming up, the Z-Man wrestling tournament.
Is it Officer Dave Zalawi? Officer
Mark Zalawi. Mark Zalawi. Yes, we were partners together up in North.
Are you kidding me?
No.
You were, yes. Zalawi, born in France. Okay, yes. Are we talking about the part of Portland?
Montana, yes.
And here's another person who was famous for community policing. So, you know, I invoked Officer Dave just because I love him so much, and also because we think it's cool that he sort of wouldn't cut his ponytail off when Chief Croker wanted him to. But there's a lot of other Officer Daves, and Portlanders, I'm just challenging you to find those people, because if we don't, again, reach into the bureaus and community around the people that are doing exactly what we want them to do, and there are plenty of people doing that, we're never going to have a victory in this issue. And, you know, I kind of now, because we have you here, I want to tap some of your wisdom, because I know that that's our colleague Renaud Catalani's real big agenda is trying to understand the family values that our immigrant and refugee families bring, trying to tap into the brain trust of people that are straddling different communities in this town that we always talk about. Did anybody call yet and ask and say, what is the second whitest city in America? It's Seattle. Okay, just want to put that out. I know we yammer about this and stuff like that, but
thank you, Lisa, for introducing that return to I don't know, family values is right. Someone's already claimed that,
right?
But I think you're right. But before we move on, it's so important, I think, at least for the 5 or 6 or 12 of us in this room, to acknowledge the sorrow that Francis brought to us this morning.
Absolutely,
and that this is a truth, and this is a suffering that we simply shouldn't argue about. This is so true and so right, and so true about Portland. And to the madam, to Francis, please know that we will sorrow always. We will never leave anyone behind in this kind of pain.
Absolutely.
And we need to take a long moment just to be in pain about that. No excuses, no arguments. And then on another day, let's start forward with this kind of discussion we're having today. But they are not contrary positions. They are both true, and they're both completely necessary to have a police force we can be proud of.
Mm. And I want to take this minute now to sort of dig into the brain trust that we have here in the work that you have done and the work you're going to do. What do you think that Portland needs? What do you think that our families that live in the numbers, how should we be wrapping around our own community to help them? This issue, by the way, that Renaud Catalani just brought up about the teenage girls, man. Now, at my job, I've heard some horrible stories about things that are happening to teenage girls, especially from the African continent, African refugee teenage girls that are getting sucked into criminality, and they don't even know what's going on, and neither do their parents. And so a lot of people are their parents, and so I don't know what to do. So I just want to put the ball in your court. In your experience now, and as a kid you did police ride-alongs, mm-hmm. What do you see when you go through your neighborhoods, and what do you think we should be bringing there?
I feel like Portland, especially the bringing those kids in, showing them that we're here to support
and
we're here to
Mark Zalawi on the gang task force, wasn't he on the gang squad? I mean, he worked with gang-involved youth as well. He did some of the hard stuff that people are very critical of all the time, but he's revered for being someone who brought people to the table and found peace for people. Am I imagining that?
Well, I know he worked up in North and Northeast Portland and worked with them. He was just a really good community police officer in that he treated people with very basic level, treated and human beings, and listened to them, and was like just really stood by the values of the
people. Traffic accident on the. He was killed in a traffic accident on the way to work. Played around his memory, and there's a number of things that take place. And so when you're, as you're, Breanne, talking about police bureau people getting more involved in the community, I have to say, this is another chance to say that the gang resistance education and training program may be critical of, many people may be critical of, as it emerged from the DARE program years ago. It was like an anti-drug program, and then it was sort of retooled to address violence. And now, though, I think maybe for the past 3 years, gang resistance education and training, they've been doing even more stuff with the newcomer communities, like literally educating kids not to be afraid of a firefighter if their house catches on fire, basic stuff like that. And they don't get a lot of credit for that. When officers do things, mm-hmm. and it's not always headline news, mm-hmm. and I just really... I'm looking at the antidote to fear. I'm looking at an antidote to despair in their tool belt to understand with how things are changing. And sometimes maybe they're changing for the better. Are we ready for that? And as Sergeant Paisley, now as you've had to look at cases of violence, you know, violence against women. Let me just start. What do you think are some of the biggest issues? Our communities are facing, all the communities, but especially the East Portland communities.
As far as domestic violence?
As far as livability issues. And if you feel that domestic violence is a big one there, then include it. But you see a lot. So what do people need in the communities? Not just law enforcement, but overall, because I think you have an eye on the overall.
Well, what I've seen is... resources that are ramping up for domestic violence. We have a unit that comes in and assists us with dealing with domestic and the follow-up that's increased, or there has been increased for the follow-up piece, because it's been wonderful, because as you know, victims' pattern of going back the abuser, right? And so that follow-up piece is very important, and that support piece is very important. And you know, with the economy, that follow-up piece to get them to make them feel like they have a safe place to fall and come back to is also important. Mm-hmm. So having that stay with unit there to stay with them and hold their hand and support.
All right.
It's huge.
All right. Breanne, do you have anything to add to that? As your guest that you really, officer, what are the areas that you really want to put your focus into? As a new Portland person, who's a local Portland person, a mm-hmm. woman who's going to be a police officer, what do you want to do?
Just be more involved and use my communication skills, helping mentor, especially the youth, because they're our future. So growing up, if we can lead them in good examples and just be there for them, then it'll create a better outlook for them and their children and their children.
Do you have advice for the Bureau to recruit more people like you? I'm just looking at you and saying, I think we want to recruit more people like you.
I think that they're doing a good job, and especially having the support I have from my mom and just how I was raised. I feel like that's going to help.
Breaking out my wallet.
And you know, one thing I think we can draw from this conversation, and it's happened over and over again, and Lisa, you discussed stereotypes. We cannot help but stereotype. Our minds do that. We generalize.
We're judgmental because we rely on our judgment. I know.
Of course. So we think of police officers, and we think a certain way. And what's happened in Doris's beat is people don't think about the police. They think about her. Or when they think about East Portland, they don't think about East Portland Police Precinct, the building of brick and mortar and glass. They think about Commander Krebs or Commander Lee, or even Commander Reese, Chief Reese was out there for a while. They think of the person working there. So when they're anxious, when they're afraid, when they have doubts about their Billy the Parent or whatever, they will think of her. And by the way, her card is on a magnet on the refrigerator. And it's really important people see police as these specific people who solve these kinds of problems. Not the 911, not the fellas showing up with the blue lights, the police, but you know, Sergeant Paisley or Officer Paisley, one or the other. And that's, I think, what's been so important in the movement in East Portland with this kind of policing and our newcomer communities. I want to bring an example of how this works. And we've talked about, you know, people seeing good policing and how rapidly that story goes in our communities, and people seeing bad policing and how rapidly that story grows in our communities. There was, and again, our cops are not really good about talking about themselves and the good things they do. It's just not what they do. They go to work. They do their work.
You guys are not media superstars. And it's weird because there's so many cop shows on TV, right? Everybody's favorite shows are cop shows. I'm sorry, but it's, to me, that's a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating aspect.
And
go
they're also
ahead.
Good-looking, right? Have you ever seen so many good-looking cops and their hair is great?
One of them.
Okay. So there's a Korean grandma, and she is mistreating her grandchildren. In fact, she's hurting them. And this Korean grandma is not only old and ill, but she has dementia. So she's kind of over-parenting her grandkids, and she's frightening everybody in the household. Now, when you hurt a child in Oregon, you know, that's assault, and you need to be busted. And so there are ways to do this, and there are other ways to do this. So Officer Paisley gives me a call and says, what are we going to do here? And we sort out how to do it. And I want to say now, thank you to her. I've said her thank you to her many, many times, but let me do it on the air. Now this grandma is involved in a therapy group. You may know among Asians we don't have this concept of mental illness, you know, or dementia. We don't bring it up. It just doesn't happen. We don't have mental illness. So you can't approach this grandma directly. You can't bust her, of course. Everyone knows this. Otherwise, the grandchildren will see her taken away to jail in handcuffs. The parents will talk badly about Portland Police Bureau, and on and on and on. But what we saw instead is her handling this in a way that allowed grandma to keep her dignity, that allowed this family to keep their family integrity, that allowed those grandkids to see their grandma is ill. She's not bad, okay? She's angry. And now, today, that grandma is going to therapy. We don't call it that. They're doing sumi watercolors. She is doing mahjong with other elder aunties who are mentally ill. And they're going gambling in an Indian casino up north once a week in a bus, you know, and our grandparents of that generation love to gamble and seldom win, but it's the buzz of ladies being together.
My grandmother always cheated.
They all do. Right? And they all think the big win is the next throw, right? But this is how we solve problems. And then the stories that came out of that are, of course, embellished and bigger than life. But that's not a story that Doris is going to say to anyone. You know, it requires us seeing it and talking it up. And the opposite is also true when we have bad policing and how that gets embellished and how that bad policing then, you know, rings true to people who've seen bad policemen.
It's interesting how the stories stick with us. I have to say, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, it's the prospects of war in 2014. Professor Francis Boyle is interviewed by Jeff Blankfort. At 9:30, we'll hear commentary and analysis by economist Richard Wolff on the dimensions of global inequality and movements for guaranteed annual incomes in Switzerland and beyond. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, West Virginia's governor tells the people of his state to drink at their own risk. Do they mean water? Also, the first of a three-part series on ongoing efforts to indict former Haitian President Aristide on Trump murder charges. And why did the Fed stay silent when they discovered a series of plots to murder members of the Occupy movement? At 11 on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter interviews climate change communication strategist Anna Fahey about how long to bring the crucial issue of global warming to your conversations. And hey, I gotta tell you guys, big fans of Spider Moccasin, you know who you are. Longtime listeners of KBOO, Spider's doing a benefit for Laughing Horse on January 25th, 9 p.m. You got to be there. The Spider Moccasin Folk Ensemble, it's a must. You have to go. So that's January 25th, 9 p.m. at Laughing Horse Books. That's at 10th and Burnside. It's a benefit for Portland Rising Tide. So if that's your issue, definitely be tuned in to 11 at the Recovery Zone and how to chat about global warming at the dinner table. I do it by proposing in the next 10 years, if somebody comes up with a super hip mosquito repellent, that person's going to be rich. And that's how I start that conversation. No, there's going to be more mosquitoes. Anyway, I'm just saying. So we're live in Studio 2 with Sergeant Doris Paisley, her daughter Brianne, who's poised to be a police officer February 13th. We're also here with Renaud Catalani from the City of Portland Office of Equity. And we're talking about community policing. We're talking about issues in community policing. And now, this, again, this is an issue. Like, what is going right? I'm just putting that out. That's the way it frames to me. What's going right? And how effective are we in understanding that, accepting that, taking that ball and making it happen more, right? What is it? And I'm gonna go to Sergeant Paisley. What is it that more Oregonians, Portlanders should know about community policing and about the Portland Police Bureau that they don't know? In your opinion, what's the most important thing for people to know?
Just all the good work that we do out there, the scholarships that we offer for college preparatory schools, for kids to go to college, underprivileged kids to go to college, so they have a good future ahead of them.
Yeah, there's the Lowy scholarships. The other things that I've seen, and I've seen them because of the Office of Equity's news blast. That's pretty much where I've seen some of these things and things coming from the Equity Office. But a lot of, actually, the Portland Police has made real inroads in reaching out to some of our newcomer communities in East County and around the city and going out there and building relationships. And that's not a story in the Oregonian. Actually, it may have been a story in the Oregonian if it took place 10 years ago when it had a full staff and was a daily, okay? Mm-hmm. And actually made me think that Angie Twang maybe did some of those stories. She was a great reporter, and now she's a professor and in Washington, D.C. But sometimes what strikes me about Portland is how it works is who has whose cell phone number. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But so actually the Police Bureau has been doing tons of outreach to newcomer communities where it's really crucial. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to ask you both Paisleys about, can you talk about your mom? Talk about her. Your mom, who couldn't be here with us today, the first generation that came to Portland. Uh-huh. What brought you here, and do you relate, do you think about that? Do you think about your roots as, I mean, is newcomer the right word? You know, in Portland, if someone's been here, if they just got here 20 years ago, they're like, oh, you're a newcomer. You know what I'm saying? It's our thing. But do you have any inspirations from your mom in what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that she came from Japan when she met my father. He was in the Navy. He met her in Yokosuka. And they came over here after my brother was born in 1963, because I was born. We lived up in Washington for a little while, and then from the Navy when I was in about sixth grade. And then we moved up to Portland.
What are some of the values that you learned from your mom? You know, because, you know, when we talk about Portland being a white city, our whole country is really, it's a bigoted country, even though newcomers, immigrants are the lifeblood of our entire cultural resource. I'm putting that out. I've been on deadancestors.com for the past year, and I'm understanding now, really, what this country is in terms of newcomers and people, you know, immigrant people washing through. So can you just talk about some of the values that your mom brings to your job? That's a weird question, but
right.
I think
yes,
there's something there.
Definitely. Well, looking back on it now, I mean, I can't even imagine how scary it would be, you know, to come to a new country without your family. Just everything is so new language. Well, she did learn English when she was in Japan, but no family here other than, you know, her kids and then my father. So that must have been, you know, how brave of her to be here. And then to build her own community support system here, just that perseverance and learning how to drive, all that stuff. So, yeah, I learned, you know, a lot of perseverance and independence from her. Mm. And
the courage to go into a totally new situation that you couldn't know what's going on.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Being, a Navy offspring, I was definitely always the new kid in school. So, I went to 12 different schools when I was before high school. So integrating myself into different environments was something that was you know, normal in my world.
So when you, as Renaud was just talking about, you become aware of a difficult family situation, probably in a family setting where people's language skills are different, people's, cultural approach to whatever we think is going on in our systems is different. How do you reach out to people that are speaking a completely different language from you? And how do you, like, navigate those waters? That's a tough question, but I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah, we do. Well, we have a language line, the city of Portland. If they don't know, you know, some basic skills. But, you know, one thing that if I have the opportunity, like Polo, when we work with talking to the groups, and one thing I always took from him when talking with an elder from certain communities, when I give them one of my business cards, he said, you know, give them your business card with both hands, and that's a show of respect. So that's something that I always take with me, and I do. On a daily basis when I'm dealing with somebody in the culture that shows that I respect them and they understand that. So just the little things like that you learn and take with you. And it just means a lot to them.
Renaud Catalani, also known as Polo, can you talk a little bit about the outreach that you've been doing? And you've been weaving different bureaus of the city into our especially our refugee communities. We have a few minutes left in the show. What are some of the refugee communities who are really affected that you're working with? We talked about the Karen refugees from Burma. We have people from Somalia. Can you name some people, name some of the war zones people are coming from? Because we heard issue. Now let's talk about some of the war zones people are coming from. I mean, just to put it all on the table.
I think.
Sorry, that's an awkward question.
The biggest war zone, of course, is Mother Mexico. And I'm embarrassed to say this, and I'm sorry to say this for our Spanish-speaking listeners, but Mexico is a war zone. It is a failed state. I don't know how else to put this. There are people with great money and great guns in charge of Mexico. So that's where most of our refugees come from. Now, whether we call them immigrants or refugees or legal definitions are not really our problem. But our problem is that we have folks here who are frightened, who are wounded and weary from that nastiness back home. And we have moms who need to be settled down in their homes so that they can raise their kids in a stable way. We have fathers who need to not go to a humiliating workplace where they're working so, so hard and not getting paid, or getting paid very badly and treated badly by other folks working there. That's the focus of our work, is settling folks in their homes, making them Portlanders, having them feel like that's their neighborhood. They own it. Whether it's the crummiest apartment complex on the planet, they need to feel that's where they're safe and that's where they're going to raise their next generation of children who are going to be tall like Brianne and good-looking and speak English really, really well. So that's our work. And I don't do that. I just know how to get others to do that, like Sergeant Paisley.
All right. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests Doris and Brianne Paisley. Renaud Catalani and off mic Jeff Selby. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. March 4th is coming up. Heads up. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Cotter. Do you remember him? The 15-year-old Canadian who was locked in Guantanamo in 2002, the U.S. military called him a terrorist. International law called him a child soldier. What happened to him? To find out, join me, Linda Olsen Osterlund, for a deeper look this Thursday morning, January 23rd at 9:30 a.m. Omar Khadr's long-term attorney, Dennis Edney, will join us to talk about his client's life now and his future. That's Guantanamo's Child on a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
And you are tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming up this morning at 9 o'clock, just in a couple seconds, Political Perspectives is the show. Today, it's the prospects of war in 2014. Professor Francis Boyle is interviewed by Jeff Blankfort. At 9:30, we'll hear commentary and analysis by economist Richard Wolff on the dimensions of global inequality and movements for guaranteed annual incomes in Switzerland and beyond. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, West Virginia's governor tells the people of his state to drink at their own risk. Also, the first of a three-part series on ongoing efforts to indict former Haitian President Aristide on trumped-up murder charges. And why did the feds stay silent when they discovered a series of plots to murder members of the Occupy movement? At 11 o'clock on The Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter interviews climate change communication strategist Anna Fahey about how to bring the crucial issue of global warming into your conversations. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. If you would like to become a member, you can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. And we're going to get right to Political Perspectives. This program, KBOO program, has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO movie night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com. And now to Jeff Blankfort interviewing Professor Francis Boyle.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. On the prospects for war in 2014, this is one of the rare news versions of TUC Radio. Recorded in the early days of 2014, the focus, with some urgency, is on the prospects for war in 2014. University of Illinois College of Law professor Francis Boyle, well-known teacher of constitutional law, attorney, and engaged critic of U.S. foreign affairs, was interviewed on January 8 by radio host Jeff Blankfort. Francis Boyle is known for his principled approach to constitutional law and his ability to intervene with writings and lawsuits in matters of human rights and civil liberties. Jeff Blankfort is a veteran journalist and commentator on the Middle East. He hosts Takes on the World, a program on international affairs on KZYX Radio in Mendocino County, California. Blankfort prefaced his interview of Professor Boyle by commenting on the sensitive negotiations that are currently underway over restructuring Iran's nuclear program. The five permanent members of the UN Security Council, that's the US, Russia, China, UK, France, plus Germany, are negotiating with Tehran over bringing the crippling sanctions imposed on Iran to an end. Beginning in 2006 to now, pushed largely by the United States, the UN Security Council has adopted six resolutions of increasing severity in response to the Iranian nuclear program. The last, Security Council Resolution 1929, adopted in June 2010,